Here's my waders right here. Wading boots. Here's my rod. It's a 4-piece, 5-weight.
On March 31st, the day before trout season, 28-year-old Adam Murrow looks over his fly fishing gear in his Albany apartment.
Here, this is fly spritz, which you spray on dry flies so that they're more buoyant.
On a kitchen counter, Murrow has a pile of brightly colored material, feathers, beads, hooks, all of the things necessary to tie flies. He shows me a small case of artificial creatures.
Like, this is a woolly bugger, and that's supposed to sort of emulate a bait fish as it's going through the water, and you kind of pull jig that. This is a zonker.
There are two main types of flies, dry flies, which float on top of the water, and wet flies, which sink. Today, Murrow is working on tying some mayfly nymphs, wet flies that mimic the larvae found in New York rivers and streams.
These are good for right now because when the water's cold, I mean, obviously there's not as many flies in the air, but the fish aren't really moving around as much as they are in the summer.
Murrow uses a specialized vise to hold a small hook with a bead attached. He wraps a wire around a material called dubbing. This will become the body of the fly. He then reaches into a bag to find what will become the tail of the mayfly nymph.
This is a bag of feathers that my friends field dressed a pheasant.
A fisherman all his life, Murrow only recently began tying his own flies, about 100 in the last couple years. With the internet, it's become much easier for fishermen to obtain materials and pre-made flies. Murrow fishes with some, but he enjoys making his own.
I mean, it's cool to catch a fish with something that you made, for sure.
After applying some tinsel and using thread to fasten some legs, Murrow uses a tool to tie a knot that won't slip to finish the nymph. It's not his finest of the day.
They say that the worse you tie a fly, the more the trout like it. There we go, I fixed it a little bit.
The next morning, Murrow and his girlfriend, Amelia McDonald, travel to the Kinderhook Creek, a half hour east of Albany. Sitting on the bank beside the bridge that spans the creek, the couple prepares. But before they can put a hook in the Kinderhook, a repair must be made. A portion of McDonald's telescoping rod cracked on the ride down. Murrow uses a piece of line to hold the rod together.
I'm a little disappointed. I'm trying to keep my spirits high.
Okay. That might do it.
We can only hope.
It's a quick fix, but it will do. Murrow and McDonald head downstream on the path that cuts through pricker bushes. The creek runs noisily, filled with green water.
Whoa, look at that. There's a beaver 5 feet from us. Okay.
Sure enough, a husky beaver paddles to the shore, sees us, and slips back into the water.
Usually they whack their tails on the water and try to scare you off. That was a pretty brave beaver.
As Murrow turns his attention back to the stream, he looks for a suitable spot to cast his line. Because the water is so cold, the fish are more likely to favor deeper, slower-moving pools. He ties on two wet flies, a woolly bugger and a mayfly nymph.
So that I have double the odds of getting a bite.
And steps into the stream for a few seconds.
I don't think I can fish here, it's too dangerous. It's like a million miles an hour.
That's what I was saying.
It didn't look that bad from up there.
Can you see the hand?
No, I think I'll be up there.
The search for a suitable spot continues. The morning warms up, and the ice begins to melt off the guides of Murrow's rod. Upriver from the bridge, McDonald finds a sunny spot on the bank and drops her line in. Murrow walks further ahead and comes across a small stream leading into the creek. The water here is shallower and allows a safer entry.
Suck my boots into the mud.
Now in past his knees, Murrow has enough room to cast. Casting with the floating fly line allows the lightweight flies to hit the water without the typical kerplunk heard when spin casting. Murrow moves the rod back and forth, and the line loops through the air onto the water's surface. A small, bright orange strike indicator sits on the water like a bobber. But as the line comes in and out and mayflies are switched to stoneflies, the spot doesn't turn up any trout.
Sometimes when you're a fisherman, you go out and you don't catch any fish that day. But that doesn't stop me.
McDonald doesn't turn up any fish either and takes the car into town. Eventually, Murrow heads back to the bridge. There, another fisherman, John Rasinovich, is also looking for trout. On the end of his line is a kernel of corn, which he hopes the trout will find interesting.
That's what they tell me.
An Albany native, Rasinovich has fished the Kinderhook before with some success.
About 3 years ago, I hadn't gone trout fishing in quite some time. And about 3 years ago, I started going again. Not too successful, that's why I give it up.
Rasinovich also knows that opening day can be a little tricky.
Some years they're hungry, some years they're not, I guess.
Yeah.
Murrow tries one more spot about a quarter mile down the road, but again, no luck today. As he exits, a vehicle pulls up with a couple rods in the back seat. Dan DeCondio drove more than an hour from Ludlow, Massachusetts to have his chance at New York's opening day.
It's like Christmas morning, you know, almost, you know, in the anticipation of catching something pretty cool, or at least catching something, having a present under the tree, right?
And with a freshly signed fishing license in hand, another angler tries his luck on the Kinderhook Creek.